Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm sports podiatrist Dr. Bob Weil. All things sports medicine, fitness, and wellness brought to you by Lower Extremity Review and MVP Parent Magazines, Global Schoolwear, School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger, Right Fit, Sports, Fitness, Wellness. A shout out for Bruce Merrin's speaking group. Proud to be part of the Bruce Merrin Celebrity Speakers Bureau. You can go to BruceMerrinCelebritySpeakers.com, find out more information. Right now we're basically doing Sports Doctors Available virtually. Got a great doubleheader today. Dr. Pat Sanahan, he's the author of How to Be a Better Procrastinator. He's an organizational consultant to over 300 organizations and groups. He joins me along with Emmy Keith. Healthy Emmy. She's a plant-based nutritionist. She's a founder of Slim on Starch program. And the Sports Doctor's in with your questions and emails. First, Dr. Pat Sanahan, welcome to the Sports Doctor.
Thanks, Dr. Bob. Glad to be here. Pretty excited about it.
Give us some background on yourself and this the crazy world of procrastination.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm an organizational consultant. I have a small kind of boutique firm in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, which is about 30 miles north of Philly. And we play in the higher ed arena for the most part, although we've had a lot of corporate clients and nonprofit clients. And we focus on strategic planning, thinking about the future, presidential transitions, how do you get senior leaders to transition into a campus and be successful with that, and then executive team building and coaching. So those are kind of the three arenas that we play with. And I wrote the book because I'm a productive procrastinator, and I wanted to get rid of the myth that a lot of people believe that procrastinators are just lazy people, and it's absolutely not true. Many are hardworking and very successful.
That's a great point. That's a very interesting point, the fact that it's not all negative, or, hey, someone's lazy, they never get anything done. The fact is that everybody puts things off, and whatever the idea, though, is to, I guess, to be aware of how you could do these things better as far as organizational situations. Again, whether we're talking about teamwork on a team, whether we're talking about coaches who might be managing athletes and or teams, or we're talking about individuals who are trying to stick with their health or diet program and they just deal with procrastination. Now, the point that, number one, it could be good and you could be a better one, is interesting. Along those lines, how do you define procrastination, and what are your points in being a better one?
Thank you. Procrastination, what happens usually, we don't tend to procrastinate around nice things, right? Like birthday parties and celebrations. We procrastinate around things we don't like. Either they're too complicated, they're boring, they're overwhelming. And what happens when we face it? For me, it's still income taxes. I've managed my procrastination for 30 years. But when I get to income taxes, my procrastination can kick in. But what usually happens, you have strong emotions very quick, anxiety, stress, overwhelm. And to get away from those emotions, which are very powerful, you step away from the task. And this is the key. The minute you step away from the task, your emotions just completely drop. You feel instant relief. And that's what keeps the habit going. You still have to do the income taxes, but that's an intellectual exercise. The emotional thing feels much more comfortable. Did I explain that all right?
You see, again, the awareness that there are skills, there are methods to be able to make a difference. Again, like we were talking about in the area of the whole world of the sports doctor, where we're talking about health and fitness situations and high performance and preventing injury, sticking with a program, dealing with some of these tremendous challenges, it seems that people who can stick with their programs in the world of athletics and they have that type of a skill, and again, whether it's an organization or a team, a lot of these points are sort of the same animal.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You've got athletes who have to exercise several hours a day. And oftentimes that can get very boring. So they make sure they change it up a lot. They have a lot of enthusiasm. You've got a lot of group support. You have some rewards at the end. So you've got to really make the exercise, which could be kind of a boring routine for 3 hours, interesting and engaging every day.
Yes, and how about the areas of being in competitive situations, having those kinds of pressures? Again, we see many times the tremendous pressures, both physically and mentally, in trying to not get injured and stay out of trouble. Another area is trying to enhance performance, let alone like you're talking about, where people and organizations are looking to maybe transition back into quote-unquote, normal life after maybe they were running the country. Everybody listening to The Sports Doctor, I'm Dr. Bob Wild, sports podiatrist. If you go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com, if you go over to radio shows, you can go back years and see who was on internationally, nationally, locally, what were the topics. You could listen to whatever you would like. If you go over to newspaper articles and magazines, you could read an array of articles on topics, on all the different things you wrote about in different newspapers and magazines, everything from what's the best shoe to the tremendous world of concussions and the new exciting action with MVP Parent Magazine. We have 40, 50,000 followers on LinkedIn and Twitter at SportsDoc. DOC Radio. We're talking with Pat Sanahan. He's written this great book talking about how to be a better procrastinator. Where does procrastination fit in with habits and stuff, Dr. Pat?
Yeah, procrastination is a big habit. It's something that reinforces itself and is hard to break. And that's what I realized over the many years was I don't think you cure it. I think you got to manage it because it's always there. It's almost like smoking. You know, that urge to smoke is with some people for 20, 30 years after they've quit. And so there's things you can do to manage the habit. Can I give you a couple quick ideas?
Yes, because I give us some ideas exactly on that, on some of these mental strategies you procrastinators seem to be able to manage well.
Yeah. So one of the things you can do is have an accountability partner. So let's say you want to run every day or walk every day. I have an accountability partner every day. I try to do 10,000 steps a day. And I meet with my friend Bill, and we've got about a 95% success rate. And we take a nice walk around. We walk around the cemetery because it's all kind of flat surfaces. It's a pretty place. We chat and talk a lot. And so I kill two birds with one stone. I have a relationship and conversation with the guy, and I also get 10,000 steps in every day, and I've got a really good success rate. So that's, we call it an accountability partner. The other thing I do, and this is what a lot of athletes do, because I used to be an athlete in college, was you make your progress visible. So when I come home from my 10,000 steps, which I usually do very early in the morning, that's one of those routines that you continue to do, I mark off the 10,000 steps with a big black marker, and it's on a yellow piece of paper so I can see it from across the room, and I start my day successfully. And then the third thing to think about, I'm trying to figure out what the exercise routines, is you got to make starting easy. So for procrastinators, starting is usually the hardest part. That's where they get overwhelmed. Now, if I'm going to go walk or run or exercise every day, and I'm looking for my shoes, and it's getting colder now, I have to wear a glove, maybe a sweatshirt, and where's my hat? And if I'm doing all that stuff, after about 5 minutes, I'll get exhausted and say, well, let me just go get a cup of coffee and read the newspaper. So I've got all my stuff in the same place organized the night before. I get up, I stretch, get all my stuff, I'm out the door within 5 minutes. So having those kinds of routines is really, really helpful.
What's the website people can find out about the book and your work, Dr. Pat?
Yeah, it's on Amazon Books, How to Be a Better Procrastinator. And then I also have a pretty good website called the Sanahan Group, SanahanGroup.com. And so I've written 12 books. And a lot of those might be interested in some of your audience.
Yeah, again, the idea of the tremendous world of weight loss. I mean, you can't watch television for 5 minutes without another diet program. The only commercials that are more than that, one of my real pet peeves, is the drug commercials. You know, the United States, only one or two countries in the world that allows constant advertising of prescription medicines on television. And, people really, they get mesmerized. And like you said, getting started, very, very difficult. How does the whole world of stress affect procrastination?
Oh, I think it just increases people's kind of tendency to procrastinate and put things off. There's always tomorrow. You know, tomorrow's the busiest day of the year. And if I can't get it done today, I want to get away from the stress. I'll do it tomorrow. You talked a little bit about goals in that we got New Year's coming around, right? And just about everybody in this country is going to have some New Year resolutions. And 92% of them don't accomplish them. And there's two reasons for that, if that's okay if I share this.
Yeah.
Is that we're too ambitious. Like, people get up and say, okay, well, I'm going to lose 20 pounds in January. Well, that's ridiculous. It's just silly thinking. It sets you up for failure from the very beginning. So if you said, hey, I'll lose 2 pounds or possibly 3, in 6 months you'll be in very good shape. And the other thing you have to be able to do, especially with New Year's resolutions, have fewer of those, like 2 for the year. That'd be huge. Why have 7 or 8 and fail at all of them? Have 2 and then give yourself a little bit more time. Those two strategies.
You know, it's a great example. Yeah, those are some great examples, Pat. You know, every on my radio show over the years, in the beginning of the year, many times I have individuals involved in health clubs and some of the different exercise facilities, et cetera, they would say the same thing. Boy, you got all those New Year's resolutions. And within about 3 months, we see the same faces that we always saw, you know, at the gym. But it's great to have those kinds of strategies, which is, you know, only make, you know, maybe limit the number that you're thinking about. And then try to be able to pay attention, being more organized, so it's not so difficult to stick with what you're doing. How do your strategies factor into, again, with organizations, let alone teams, how do your strategies factor into team chemistry, teamwork regarding the world of procrastination?
Well, especially on teams, we do a fair amount of work with executive teams. I've written a couple of books on teams. If you listen, 20 to 25% of the adult population in this country are chronic procrastinators. It's tens of millions of people. So there's a real good chance that you either are connected to somebody, either professionally or personally, who procrastinates. And if that's a team member, one of the last things you need to do or should do is be critical of them, because that'll just kick in the habit big time. And they'll have a lot of regret and it'll increase their stress. What you could do is be a little bit of a thought partner. The thought partner is someone who says, Pat, you say you're going to lose 20 pounds. It sounds like a whole lot. Let's see if we can do something more realistic with 2 or 3 pounds. And then maybe every Friday we'll have a cup of coffee and see how you're doing. So there you are. You're kind of walking with that person. You know, you try to help them out to get a realistic picture of what is possible. And you're also giving them some emotional support. And if you do that on a team, you'll see oftentimes procrastinators will perform at very high levels. But they need the support, not the criticism. Because oftentimes they just have unrealistic expectations. A lot of times, too, procrastinators, more is better. You know, they love lots of choices. And the more choices you have, it'll paralyze you. And what we know in the research is 3 to 5 choices or options is ideal. And actually, 3 is really the magic number. So if you're working with someone who's a procrastinator, you got to say, Pat, it isn't 7 or 8 ideas. We don't have to brainstorm all this stuff. Let's come up with 2 or 3 max and really work on those kinds of focuses. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, and it's also, again, I think one of the profound points is in the title of your book, where you talk about be a better procrastinator, and you're giving the let's call it the art of procrastination, where you're actually looking to be not only accept the fact that it's not the worst thing in the world by any means, but it sure could be something that could drag us down regardless of what we're trying to accomplish, but at the same time, there are strategies that could really, really make a difference. And I, you know, when you talk about, you know, again, those mental strategies that procrastinators manage, I know is one of the areas that you talk about in the book. What are a few more bullet points that you stress in the book before we run out of time, Pat?
Yeah, sure. Let's just talk a little bit about the notion of willpower. A lot of procrastinators beat themselves up because they think they should be tough enough and disciplined enough, and I got to punch through it, and I just can't. Willpower is a very limited resource. There's not a big pool of willpower in your backyard. There's a small little pail. And so you've got to use it. It's a resource like a muscle. You exercise, your muscle gets tired. So does willpower. It's like a battery that you run too often, and it just runs out of energy. So what's important about willpower is to use it strategically. And for procrastinators, it's really helpful to apply it at the beginning of a task, right? Because remember, starting is the hardest thing for procrastinators. Use your willpower, your limited willpower, at the beginning of a task. Start something for 15 minutes and then see what happens. And then the second thing, in the ending, that's where I'm a real good beginner and a pretty good middle guy, and I've written a lot of books. It's the last mile is the hardest for me. That's when I apply my willpower and use some of these techniques that are in the book. The other thing to think through, too, Dr. Bob, is a lot of times procrastinators think they should wait till they feel like doing something. Well, I'm never going to feel like doing my income taxes. It's just not going to happen. And so they think they have to have motivation and action, and it's completely reversed. If you do some action, you can create the motivation and momentum that's necessary. So just starting a chewable chunk of 15 minutes can move the ball forward, and then the motivation will follow. But if you're waiting to be motivated, like creative people tell you that, if I'm waiting to be inspired, I could be sitting here all day, all week, all year. I have to do something to move things forward.
Yeah, it makes an awful lot of sense. And again, the fact that number one, procrastination is something that just about all of us deal with probably all the time in some way, shape, or form. And the idea of, again, being aware of some of the different ways that we can make a positive changes in so many areas, that alone is a huge stress reducer, isn't it? The fact that, hey, I've got a new group of strategies here.
Absolutely. I created this over 30 years because I got stuck doing my doctoral dissertation many years ago, and I was reading my dissertation. I wasn't writing it. And my board chair says, you got to start writing, Sandy, and you're out of this program. You know what I mean? It was a subtle form of procrastination because, well, I'm reading, I'm doing research, but really I wasn't producing anything. And the threat of me getting kicked out of the program motivated me to figure out, what do I do? And I asked a few people who had finished their dissertations, which is always a good thing for procrastinators to do, is ask for help, get some advice.
Yeah, and quickly, Pat, what sport did you play in college, Pat?
Football. Temple University.
Okay. Give us quickly the website again. People can find out about the book, Dr. Pat Sanahan.
Yeah, it's the Sanahan Group, Sanahan, at sanahangroup.com. And the book is also available on Amazon Books and Barnes & Noble.
Fat. How to be a better procrastinator. Thanks so much, Dr. Pat. Hold on. We'll be right back, everybody. Sports Doctor. Hey, everybody. It's Dr. Bob Weil, a sports doctor. I'm excited to announce the release of my new book, co-written with Sharky Zartman, hashtag Hey Sports Parents. An essential guide for any parent with a child in sports. You know, Sharky is a former Hall of Fame volleyball player. She's the mom of two daughters who became Division I volleyball players. Together, we have over 70 years of combined youth sports experience. The goal of the book? Give you the essential tools and guidance to make your experience as a sports parent the best it could be. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents is divided into four sections. The first section, Sports Parenting 101. Sharky talks everything about parenting, about coaching, that whole interaction between parents and coaches, coaching your own kid. What are the things to really pay attention to? The second section is the Sports Doctors In, yours truly. My discussion of injury prevention and treatment, choosing the best shoes, youth sports and drugs, essential exercises, the dilemma of youth football, orthotics. Third section, experts speak out. We bring together eight different experts in nutrition and sports performance and mental training in all aspects of coaching in that section. The last section is the parents' perspective, some insights from about a half a dozen parents of athletes. So everyone, hey, get out your megaphone, spread the word. Now available on Amazon. Order now. You'll be more confident. So will your young athlete. Hashtag, Hey Sports Parents. Hey everybody, Dr. Bob here. LER, Lower Extremity Review Magazine, is celebrating their 10th anniversary. It's been a decade of providing key clinical and practical information about concerns, conditions, and treatment solutions for the lower extremity, both sports and non-sports alike. LER is the only multidisciplinary publication for doctors of all specialties, educators, therapists, and trainers. They inform practitioners on current developments in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of lower extremity injuries. LER prides itself on editorial integrity and evidence-based content. Their tagline, collaborative care for better outcomes, says it all. Hey, colleagues, go to lermagazine.com. Hey, everybody, live from Chicago. Welcome back. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. I want to welcome Emmy Keith, Healthy Emmy. She's a plant-based nutritionist. She's the founder of the Slim on Starch program. Healthy Emmy, welcome to the Sports Doctor.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Give us some background on yourself and Healthy Emmy.
Sure. So I'm a plant-based nutritionist. As you said, I created the Slim on Starch program. So when a client wants to lose weight on a plant-based diet, they come to me, and I work with them as well as a mindset coach and a nutrition coach that I assign to them that are therapists and registered dietitians to guide them through the process of losing weight. So it's a three-on-one program.
Yeah, I think the fact that you have collaborative teammates makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the biggest topics on the Sports Doctor, I call it the mental game, whether you're the best athlete in the world, whether you're parents of a young athlete, whether you're a coach, et cetera, paying attention to that mental side makes a big difference, especially when you're talking about the crazy world of weight reduction. You can't watch television for more than 5 minutes without seeing another commercial and diets and whatever, it's forever. And what's special, Emmy, about plant-based?
The great thing about a plant-based diet is that you can eat large quantities for not that many calories. So you don't have to starve yourself if you're looking to release weight. And in fact, I don't even have my clients count calories. Instead of focusing on how much they eat, we focus on what they eat. And they're able to lose weight without micromanaging portions.
Now, you're not prohibiting non-plant food, but based mainly. Is that how you would define that?
Prohibit isn't the best word. We call them later foods, anything that's not going to contribute to their weight loss. It is free from animal products, so they're not eating any meat or dairy or cheese or eggs, but I mean, I don't treat it like a religion.
Right. Now, in the world of, again, health and wellness, in the world of high performance, we've seen the nutritional side of things explode over the past couple of decades. There's not a team at any level that doesn't take nutrition very, very seriously, and all sorts of different programs. And do you see a difference in the health and wellness program and a weight loss philosophy, if any difference at all?
In terms of a difference between what two things? I'm sorry, I want to make sure I understand the question correctly.
Yeah, between health and wellness and losing weight and the idea of the two different areas,
sure,
whether or not
sure.
They should be, or does the for health and wellness, do these athletes get whatever protein they would need with a plant-based nutrition?
Yeah, good question. So I always say when you focus on health, you lose weight as a side effect. But when you focus on weight loss, you lose health as a side effect because you'll do these crazy crash diets. You'll do things that are unsustainable. So I really make the focus with my clients to eat in a way that they could eat for the rest of their lives. Not focus on the fact that they're losing weight, losing weight, losing weight, losing weight, but let's build a really strong foundation of whole plant foods that will sustain you through every part of the life cycle. So they really aren't that different, what we look like when we're eating just healthfully to maintain weight versus what we are eating when we lose weight.
You know, it's amazing, Healthy Emmy. I've been talking about childhood obesity for 25 years, give or take a few weeks, on The Sports Doctor, the whole challenge of obesity. So much new awareness, so much new attention, and we're really still treading water in both areas. It's just amazing how consistent this has really, really been. Do you find that the medical community has really paid much more attention to the whole world of nutrition, or are they still catching up, it seems?
Yeah, it seems as though they're still catching up, although there is one university has now made it a requirement for their med school students to have some nutrition counseling and really ups the requirements there. But many doctors I find have such a vast, so much knowledge, a huge breadth of knowledge, that nutrition and the nuances of nutrition, how could they know all the nuances when there's so much to know? And so for the people that are looking for specific nutrition advice, go to a nutritionist who specializes in that. Go to your doctor to have them refer you to a nutritionist. But I would count on the people that really have specialty in this area.
What difference, if any, is there in the terms nutritionist and dietitian?
Yeah, so a dietitian does an internship and has gone to university to get their accreditation. Somebody who is a nutritionist doesn't have to go to a four-year university or do an internship in order to get their accreditation.
How long have you been Healthy Emmy?
I have been Healthy Emmy. Well, I first went on the plant-based diet when I was 19, and I'm 26 now. In a past life, I was a math teacher, and while I was a math teacher, I started crafting the Healthy Emmy identity by just posting on YouTube about my passion for plant-based nutrition, and I've been posting on YouTube for about 5 years.
And how active are you physically yourself?
So I'm a runner, I'm a marathon runner, and I also do strength training, but I run every day of my life. I play soccer, so being active is a big, big part of my life, and it's something that I really
You're
enjoy.
In the right place, young lady.
Way.
Yeah, you're talking to the sports
yeah,
doctor.
Yeah, lifelong athlete,
you're talking about,
for sure,
you're talking
for
about
sure.
Get some custom orthotics, young lady. You're talking about strengthening those feet and ankles. Yes, this is a huge part, but again, the nutritional side is such a big part of things. What's the best way people could find out about information on Healthy Emmy?
You can go to healthyemmy.org. So it's Healthy Emmy is EMMIE.org.
Tell us about the Slim on Starch program.
Yeah, so the Slim on Starch program, as I touched on a little bit at the beginning, if somebody wants to lose weight on a plant-based diet, they come to me, we have a conversation, we talk about their background, so I hear their whole story. I say, what are your first memories of food and weight and body image? We start at the very beginning so I can have a comprehensive history about their weight and body image and food relationship up until the point that they decided to begin working with me. And from that, we talk about their goals, what they need to get there, and then I assign them to a mindset coach and a nutrition coach. And they're eating an exclusively whole foods plant-based diet for 6 weeks, and we go through that walk together, and then we continue on if we would like to. We've seen tremendous success. I've had clients lose up to 100 pounds through the course of our work together. So it's really a good program.
Who are the two teammates? What are their specialties?
So I actually have a pretty large team. I have a number of mindset coaches and a number of nutrition coaches, and they all have different specialties. And after I talk to a client, I know exactly which mindset coach to assign them to and exactly which nutrition coach to assign them to.
Yes, the area of sometimes high performance and the idea of I have many sports nutritionists who join us on the Sports Doctor. They use the term fueling the body, which sometimes is a whole different mindset, talking about mindset, for individuals to understand. Because truly the new medicine is, everybody, if you have your pen out, the new medicine is to eat smarter and keep moving and staying active in so many different ways. What age groups are you involved with, Emmy?
I'm involved with men and women at all stages of the life cycle. I will say, though, the part of the life cycle that I really have seen an influx in recently is menopause and postmenopausal women. I documented my mom's journey on my program on my YouTube channel. She is in her early 60s, and that inspired a lot of
you
women
need,
in their late 50s.
You'll let me know. You let me know. The Sports Doc will pay a visit on your YouTube channel and talk about biomechanics. all of your different people. Absolutely, we'd be glad. We'd be glad to do that. All part of the educational process. How do you find also any? Again, you said you're a runner. You've been an athlete. Do you find, because of the eating disorders has been a specialty that we've also included on the Sports Doctor when we're dealing with figure skaters or gymnasts and this whole craziness with body image, and you mentioned that very, very early on, and, you know, paying attention to some of these younger athletes. Are you in that world at all?
Yeah, so I'm familiar with, you know, Red S, Relative Energy Deficiency in Sport, which used to be called the Female Athlete Triad, and I do have athletes that come from a world where weight is a very big part of it. Wrestlers, boxers, runners, figure skaters. And the philosophy that I take toward it, one of my favorite sayings is, your body is an instrument, not an ornament. And looking at food as this pathway to becoming the best athlete you can be, as opposed to manipulating your body to fit into the sport.
So back to the area of starch and its importance and the limitation, mm-hmm. when you talk again about slim on starch, what is that? How do you say that in English?
So the majority of the calories, the majority of the energy that you get while you're going through my program is from potatoes, sweet potatoes, rice, beans, oatmeal, corn. As Dr. McDougall talks about, who wrote a book called The Starch Solution, all large populations in all verifiable human history that were lean, trim, and healthy lived on a diet of starch. You know, the Mayans and the Aztecs on corn, and the Middle Eastern of the breadbasket of the world, and the Egyptians on wheat. So we have a lot of the Okinawans on sweet potatoes and the Chinese on rice. We have a lot of proof that a starch-based diet is a diet for longevity and health. And people think potatoes and rice make you fat because carbs make you fat, but neither of those are true. So that's what I mean by starch.
Okay, we'll talk more about all of that. We're talking with Healthy Emmy Keep, and it's the Sports Doctor, and we will be right back. Hey, everybody. MVP Parent Magazine is special. Evidence-based topics on all areas of youth sports. Rich Dubin, a sports dad himself, takes his 3 decades of publishing. He just celebrated the 12th anniversary of the acclaimed LER Lower Extremity Review magazine, one of Sports Doctor's key supporters, and he pours it into MVP Parent. Factual evidence-based info on such key topics like physical and mental training, nutrition, injury awareness, treatment, recovery, and prevention. I am proud to be a contributor to MVP Parent with the Sports Doctor is in article in each issue. Go to MVPParent.com. MVPParent.com. Hey, it's Dr. Bob. Right Fit Sports Fitness Wellness is a unique physical fitness experience whose breakthrough formula is built for all ages and abilities. Young or old, high-level athletes have special needs or seeking post-rehab and recovery therapy, Right Fit has a 15-year track record of measurable results. Right Fit has 2 Illinois locations, LaGrange and Willowbrook. No membership fees. Pay as you go. go to right-fit.com, Right Fit Sports Fitness Wellness, right-fit.com.
Hey, it's Dr. Bob. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger is setting a new standard within the school uniform market. More schools are understanding the value that uniforms provide, school pride and identification being one of them. Another is the well-recognized reduction of student pressure to keep up with classmates in the real world of what to wear each day to school. School Uniforms by Tommy Hilfiger provides amazing quality and value to its partner schools and families. It is truly the first brand in this market that students are excited about wearing. Go to the website, globalschoolwear.com. Globalschoolwear.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor Live. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. Happy holidays, everybody. We're talking nutrition. We're talking with nutritionist Emmy Keefe, her Healthy Emmy World. And we were talking about plant-based nutrition. How long, Emmy, when someone talks about the realities and the how long it takes, for example, to make these kinds of habit changes, or how long a program do you involve people with? Because like you said, you're looking to make forever changes. So how long does it take to start to see some changes when people are involved in the program?
I say the slower you go, the faster you get there. So we are not racing against anybody. Yes. And what I don't want somebody to do is try to lose weight as quickly as possible, because then they come back to me in a year and they say, Emmy, I lost a bunch of weight when we were working together, but then I gained it all back. And it's because they just went too quickly. You know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So healthy, sustainable weight loss is about a pound per week. And people might say, what? I've done diets in the past where I lost 20 pounds in 10 days. Well, I'm sure you gained it all back. That's totally unsustainable. So I really want us to approach this from a place of longevity, sustainability, and patience.
Right. That's where we hooked you up with our first guest, Dr. Pat, with the Sanahan, with the procrastination world. It makes such a big difference, again, in this day and age where obesity is such an incredible challenge, both with the coronavirus as well as overall for years, with high blood pressure, the explosion of diabetes in our population. You mentioned, again, the postmenopausal women with so much attention to all of those types of changes. That's a big part of your clients?
Yeah, for sure. You know, as I said, I documented my mom's journey on my YouTube channel. So my mom had postmenopausal weight gain, as many women do, and thought, oh, well, this is it. You know, women just gain weight after menopause, and it sucks, but you deal with it. And I said, no, you get on my program. She also had high cholesterol, which she didn't want to take statin. She really wanted to clean that up with diet, and we took care of both. So she lost weight, and her cholesterol is now in the normal range without medication.
Give us some examples. You know, first of all, is it three meals a day? Still in your world, plant-based? Is it change? Give us an example of a day's worth of plant-based nutrition that you're talking about.
Yeah, so this is another hot take that I have, that I do not subscribe to the idea of eating three meals a day or eating five small meals a day or three meals and snacks. Another big part of what we do inside of the program is teach clients how to listen to their hunger and fullness cues. And instead of saying you have to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, saying you have to learn when your body sends you a hunger cue and respond to it. And then once that hunger cue has gone away, we're done eating for the moment. So for me, for example, I might wake up and I might eat at 7 a.m. or I might not eat until 10 a.m. It's when that hunger signal comes. I could end up eating three times a day, or I could end up eating five times a day, just listening to my body and going with the flow of it, as opposed to keeping it very rigid and not giving your body an opportunity to communicate with you.
Interesting term, hunger cue. It's an interesting term. It makes a lot of sense. Maybe being able to respond to that, again, compared to these, some of these traditions where, you know, people would say, you know, oh, the diet, I've got to starve myself, or I've got to cut things all the way down. You know, the word diet, I guess, is one of the world's worst definitions. It's just got such a negative side to it. That's why my sports nutrition friends would talk about fueling. They said, forget the word diet. How do you feel about that?
You couldn't have said it better yourself. I mean, you took the words out of my mouth. I always have to give a disclaimer when I use the word diet. And I'm just referring to the food that we put in our mouth, but it has become so emotionally charged.
Now, the fact that you yourself, like you said, you're an everyday runner, you're an athlete, you sure need to step up nutrition to try to stay away from injury, to try to be as healthy as you can. Do you find that you're able, because you're talking about hunger cues and whatever, you're listening to your body and you're coming up with what makes sense, but your world is you act as a coach for people to make those types of transitions.
Right. Yeah. So it's something that was said to me once when I was starting my practice was, the coach doesn't get into the game and start playing in the game. The coach does their thing and the players do their thing. So my life looks a little bit different than the people that I'm coaching because I'm not actively on a weight loss journey. But at some point, they're going to be in my position. And so I can guide them to where they need to be. And then once they get to where I am in terms of weight maintenance, then we can start to work together in that sense.
Another good term, weight loss journey. Again, you got some good sports psychology teachers behind you, you know, with some of these terms. But again, the mental game is the whole ball of wax, isn't it? If somebody can't stick mm-hmm. with it, it doesn't work. And I think this is something that the world of nutrition has really incorporated, definitely as long as you're around, because you're still a young lady.
Yes, and sometimes it's not what you're eating, but it's what's eating you. And we have to dig a little bit deeper than just what's on your plate, but talk about why you're eating the foods that you're eating and treating the body, your body the way that you are.
You know, the area of bullying, the number one reason of bullying, we had the author of the great book and movie, Fat Boy Chronicles, was one of our guests, Mickelson, and he was talking about the fact that the number one reason for bullying is weight-related, is obesity. And kids who have had gone through this whole scenario, and it seems the earlier the better, but childhood obesity is still such a big problem, and it makes sense. I guess educated parents can really make a difference in how their children are doing. I can't believe we've flown through the time with this. Amy, give me the website again. People could find out about you and your program.
HealthyEmmie.org.
HealthyEmmie.org. Emmy Keefe, thanks so much for joining us. Hold on, everybody. Emmy, hold on. It's the Sports Doctor.
If you live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.
Hey, everybody. MVP Parent Magazine is special. Evidence-based topics on all areas of youth sports. Rich Dubin, a sports dad himself, takes his three decades of publishing He just celebrated the 12th anniversary of the acclaimed LER, Lower Extremity Review magazine, one of sports doctors' key supporters, and he pours it into MVP Parent. Factual evidence-based info on such key topics like physical and mental training, nutrition, injury awareness, treatment, recovery, and prevention. I am proud to be a contributor to MVP Parent with the Sports Doctor is In article in each issue. Go to MVPParent.com. MVPParent.com. Hey, everybody, we are back live from Chicago. It is the Sports Doctor is In segment where we preview some upcoming shows and we answer some emails, stuff like that. Happy holidays to everybody. We've got some great shows coming up next week. One of the champions in the educational world with disabilities, PhD, Dr. Paul Wachansky, is joining us. He's a motivational speaker. He speaks to students, parents, all over the country regarding his experiences. Then we've got one of the champions of overall fitness, Lisa Goldenthal, previous guest, talking about some New Year's ideas and goals for the upcoming year. The following week, we got returning Dr. Chris Ahmad. He is the head physician for the New York Yankees. We're excited about having him back. And then Christine Blanchett. She is the fitness entrepreneur. She is the host of Run With It. And the Sports Doctor, as everybody knows, has a segment, same name, Sports Doctor is In, on Christine's show. Great stuff coming up. Some emails. Where are they? Pat says, I'm a 30-year-old runner. I've been reading so much about these carbon fiber inserts in running shoes. There's a lot of hoopla, Pat. A carbon fiber, think of a springboard for the foot and lower extremity, is something that's very exciting. The contest has been how much, how thick, how controlling, does it cause trouble? Can it enhance performance? It definitely enhanced performance in the world of marathons when the two-minute barrier was broken, and this was the shoes that they were in. I just tell people, again, to make sure that they're comfortable and make sure that they're not looking to be too aggressive too soon with some of these technologies. Sometimes things cause more trouble than we bargained for. Getting some good feedback with your own running experiences makes a lot of sense, Pat, before you get too aggressive. So I think you could look at them with optimism, especially if you're a competitor. Rita says, my daughter is a type 2 diabetic. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. I'm a type 2 diabetic. I love playing tennis. In my 50s, I'm concerned about neuropathy. You know, Rita, neuropathy, the loss of sensation in the nerves, commonly in the feet, can be and often are related to diabetes. It's a difficult problem. We want to pay attention to strengthening feet and ankles, and we want to pay attention to biomechanics. We have great success, including custom orthotics, to try to reduce any of the physical forces that could be irritating nerve areas, too much pressure in certain areas, under the ball of the foot, for example, too much pressure in the heel, as example. So we want to look at the biomechanics. Also, sometimes we'll see, we want to pay attention to the control of the diabetes. The diabetes gets out of control, everything gets worse. So be an educated diabetic. No reason you can't continue to play tennis and do some of these things like we talked about, shoes, looking at orthotics, physical therapy, and medical side treatment regarding the neuropathy. Chris says, in your book, both my sons are serious soccer players. They're adolescents. You talk about the two exercises. Could you expand a little? Yeah, Chris, again, whether you're a young soccer player, whether you're a young figure skater, tennis, whatever it happens to be, we want to strengthen your feet and ankles, period. Rubber bands are a great way to do it. You could be the best athlete in the world. You could be challenged by rubber bands, and you could be an eight-year-old, and you can benefit from using rubber bands if you're instructed on the proper techniques, which are easy to learn. And many times we will have these young kids go to an athletic trainer or a physical therapist and learn the proper technique. So strengthening the feet and ankles is a very big deal, no matter what their age is, no matter what their level is. And that this is very, very helpful. Working on balance, including balance training exercises, is the other big area. Standing on tilt boards, balancing on things like the Bosu, the fantastic sand dune stepper, other kinds of mini trampoline we used for years, where these young kids would be balancing in different areas of the trampoline, playing catch, or it strengthens everything. It strengthens all the stabilizers we have. Ironically, these same two exercises, concepts, is what I would recommend for your parents or you. Regardless, these types of exercises should be included. I have another one here from Carl. My daughter's 11 years old. She's a figure skater. She skates 4 or 5 days a week. Her knees are a problem. Orthotics helpful? Yes, yes, yes. We've had great success, Carl, with prescription orthotics for decades. Half the girls I've seen over the years, and I've seen so many, it's one of my big specialties in the world of figure skating, are knee trouble. Foot-related knee problems, excessively pronated feet, common towards the flat foot kind of imbalance, causing excessive torque in the knees. And many times we will see that we can be far more effective with proper orthotics than trying to enhance these kinds of corrections with custom boots or heat-shaped boots, et cetera. So have your daughter consult with a sports podiatrist that can talk to you about these particular factors regarding the relationship. Again, figure skating, you raise the center of gravity an inch and a half or so. You're balancing on an eighth-inch wide blade, the slightest foot imbalances. I'll tell you what's also very exciting, Carl. Orthotics enhance every aspect of figure skating. So not only will you be going after her knee problems, you'll be making a positive difference in things like edging, balance, speed, explosiveness. What did I leave out? I've never had a coach, talking figure skating. The Winter Olympics are coming up a couple of weeks, a month, whatever it is. It will be the 12th anniversary of Evan Lysacek, a young boy from Naperville, Illinois, who was 10 years old when we put orthotics in his skates. It's 12 years since this kid became the gold medal winner in the figure skating, men's figure skating. So I can't believe how time flies. But I told Evan all these years that I would be bragging about him forever. So if you're listening, Evan, say hey. Hopefully you'll rejoin us in 2022. Everybody, happy holiday. Stay safe. Be educated. Get vaccinated. It's the Sports Doctor. Thank you.